following program is a presentation of the FlyPod New Media Network, www.theflypod.com.
Hello, and welcome to the Did You Know Show. I am your host, Alex Parnuk, and together we'll attempt to resolve some of the most complex problems on the planet, but in a very common sense sort of way, something that seems to be sorely missing in this age of media information overload. In doing this show, one would ask, why have I committed myself to this task? The plain and simple answer is, I want to get information to you that seems to be missing and not provided in the old media. So join me in the show through your interaction by providing comments, suggestions, and if necessary, criticism when you don't agree. You can contact me at shout@theflypod.com. This segment of the Did You Know Show highlights the United States Commission on Civil Rights, which is an independent commission of the executive branch of government. The year was 1957. The first artificial satellite to orbit our Earth, Sputnik 1, was launched by the Russians. Federal troops were sent into Little Rock, Arkansas to provide safety for students. The first military casualties occurred in Vietnam. The president was Republican Dwight D. Eisenhower. In the democratically controlled Senate, by a vote of 72 to 18, 43 Republicans and 29 Democrats, and in the Republican-controlled House of Representatives, by a vote of 285 to 126, 167 Republicans and 118 Democrats, the United States Congress passed the Civil Rights Act of 1957. This legislation protected the rights of individuals relating to voting. Additionally, the law established a civil rights division within the Office of the Attorney General, and lastly, created the United States Civil Rights Commission, which will be highlighted in this Did You Know Show podcast as an independent advisory commission in order to ensure all citizens' rights were being protected with regard to the voting process. This commission had the authority to investigate, report on, and make recommendations relating to allegations of the infringement of voter rights. One might ask the question, why? The answer to that lies in the activities of voter registrars in certain southern states who, at the time, through discriminatory voter registration rules, required persons of color to answer such questions as, what is due process? Or, how many bubbles in a bar of soap? I kid you not, listeners, these types of questions are asked in the official process of our voting laws. At that time in history, the only remedy to the United States Attorney's Office regarding violations of voter rights was a criminal action, which was long, involved, and required the violation of the law to occur and have a specific litigant or violator in order for the violation of law to proceed. These violations and often ludicrous requirements by registrars not only violated the spirit of the Constitution, but also the statutes of the United States Code. Interestingly enough, our history of voting has changed significantly over the years. Consider this. When the United States Constitution was written, only white male property owners were allowed to vote, which during those years represented approximately only 16 to 17% of the population. In 1810, the last religious prerequisites were eliminated. And then in 1850, property ownership and tax requirements were lifted, and almost all white males were allowed to vote. In 1855, Connecticut instituted the first literacy test for voting, and in 1857, Massachusetts followed suit. Interestingly, these literacy tests in Massachusetts and Connecticut were instituted to discriminate against Irish Catholic immigrants and not blacks. By 1870, the 15th Amendment was passed, giving slaves the right to vote. In 1890, Mississippi adopted a literacy test to preclude blacks from voting. And finally, women were given the right to vote in 1920 by the passage of the 19th Amendment. In 1924, the Indian Citizen Act gave Native Americans the right of citizenship, which included voting. In 1944, the Supreme Court outlawed white primaries in Smith versus Allwright. It should be noted in Texas and other states, primaries were conducted by private associations, which by definition could exclude whomever they chose. The court declared the process to be a public one under the venue of the 15th Amendment and thereby illegal. And finally, in 1961, with the passage of the 23rd Amendment, the District of Columbia, where our government resides, allowed residents to participate in presidential elections. Now back to the Civil Rights Act of 57 and the United States Commission on Civil Rights. This first action, which was initiated by the Office of the President, Dwight D. Eisenhower, through his Attorney General in the form of a letter which proposed legislation requesting the creation of a commission to investigate violations of law involving voting. Also, creation of a civil rights division within the Department of Justice. Also, enactment of new law to aid in the enforcement of voting rights. And lastly, to amend laws permitting the federal government to seek from the civil courts preventive relief in civil rights cases. The Civil Rights Act of 1957 is passed by Congress and signed by Eisenhower, was a 6-page long document and provided a remedy as to ongoing violations of persons' right to vote during this time. This legislation specifically created the Commission on Civil Rights. And from the law, I read, Part 1, Section 101, created within the executive branch of government a Commission on Civil Rights. The commission was composed of 6 members appointed by the president with the advice and consent of the Senate, meaning each member appointed by the president had to be agreed to by the Senate of the United States. Additionally, not more than 3 of the members shall at any one time be of the same political party. And finally, 4 members of the commission would constitute a quorum. In Section 102, the rules of procedure were established. In Section 103, compensation was prescribed. In Section 104, delineated the duties of the commission. And Section 105 provided for the powers of the commission. Section 106 authorized the appropriations for the commission, meaning they would get paid. And finally, as a side note, and returning to Section 104, and specifically in Section 104C, it states, 60 days after the submission of its final report and recommendations, the commission shall cease to exist. Well, not quite. Much legislation that was passed had this item as to closure attached. But here we are, 50 years beyond the Civil Rights Act of 1957, and this small entity of the executive branch of government is still in existence today. I'm not arguing the benefits or necessity of this commission, just the reality that legislation written, creating something within the executive branch of government, was to have an end date. But by today's standards of big government, once it's created, it stays in existence. This was in 1957. Bringing us up to date and into the 21st century, we find that changes have been made to the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights. As in most things in government, both the number of commissioners has grown, as also the staffs and the budget. Additionally, from a legal standpoint, the commission has been updated and changed by additional pieces of legislation, including the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights Acts of 1983, 91, and the Civil Rights Commission Amendments of 1994. Today, the commission is comprised of 8 members. 4 are appointed by the president, 2 are appointed by the president pro tem of the Senate, and 2 are appointed by the Speaker of the House. Additionally, no more than 4 members can be from the same party, and the president designates the chair and vice chair of the commission. Lastly, a staff director is also appointed by the president with the concurrence of the majority of the commissioners. Further, this commission has expanded its outreach by appointing 51 separate state advisory committees, 50 states and the District of Columbia, to act as the eyes and ears of the commission in these individual states. These committees work at the behest of the commission. Digging deeper, we find that the committees are further authorized to appoint regional offices to assist the committees in their fact-finding and report activities. If one were to ask what the commission was tasked to do, and I quote, in Section 3 we find, shall investigate allegations in writing under oath or affirmation relating to deprivations because of color, race, religion, sex, age, disability, or national origin. There is much more verbiage, but not enough room in this annotated presentation as to the Commission on Civil Rights. In summary, what can we say about the United States Commission on Civil Rights? Within the last 5 or so years, the Commission on Civil Rights has addressed issues such as race neutrality with regard to the Black Panther Party, civil rights and the mortgage crisis, enforcing religious freedom in school, school desegregation, and federal procurement after the Adirondack issue. But I would be remiss if I didn't present to you the listeners what the individual commissioners often write to members of Congress, expressing their beliefs as to actions of the government. And since the immigration/amnesty issue is one that has not left us for quite some time, I quote from a letter from three commissioners to the Black Caucus of the United States Senate. In light of recent debates on comprehensive immigration reform, we are writing to address a rarely discussed effect of granting legal status or effective amnesty to illegal immigrants. This, the three Civil Rights Commission members wrote. And further, they state, again a quote, such grant of legal status will likely disproportionately harm lower-skilled African Americans by making it more difficult for them to obtain employment and depressing their wages when they do obtain employment. It should be noted and added that individual state advisory committees, or SACs as they are called, provide reports, advisory recommendations, and suggestions. But even these are disclaimered as to not being, and I quote again, the views expressed in this report and the findings and recommendations contained herein are those of a majority of the state advisory committee members and do not necessarily represent the views of the commission or its individual members, nor do they represent the policies of the United States. So one might ask, what is this business of report writing still going on? Do we really need this? And finally, so as not to be remiss as to what this U.S. Commission on Civil Rights cost the taxpayer, I quote the following figures from its own request for congressional appropriations for fiscal year 2013. I quote, our $9.4 million appropriation request will support our civil rights agenda of promoting equal opportunity without regard to color, race, religion, sex, age, disability, or national origin. It will allow the Commission to serve as a civil rights watchdog, advise and collaborate with the President, Congress, and other federal agencies, and provide the public access to critical civil rights information. So you see, it's only $9.4 million they are requesting. And what's $9.4 million out of the trillions that are in the federal budget? Well, I suggest that you, the taxpayer, judge whether this is money well spent or not. Well, until next time in our next Did You Know show, keep your powder dry and your silver coins in your pocket.